RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time for another Monday morning health hacks here at RCR. Dr. Glenn Davies, reversalnz.co.nz is back with us. Hi, Glenn. How are you doing?
Excellent, Paul. Always good to be here with you. And also congratulations to RCR for being on the air and making such a difference.
Oh, yeah. One day they'll write about it, Glenn.
Yeah.
Well, someone will do a thesis on it. A thesis.
Indeed. And to think that you were there from the very beginning.
That's right. I've been the first chapter, you would hope, or at least the second. Anyway, Let's see what happens. Let's see if it eventually ends up being taught in journalism schools and broadcasting schools, like when it was reset back to what it should have been. Anyway, we're here to talk about fasting. You could say there's been a long time between, I don't know, certainly not nutritious, but yummy-looking media up until now. So we're bringing that back as well. So there has been a bit of a fast. How's that for a pivot? A bit of a fast, as it were.
That worked. Recently. That definitely worked. Yeah.
Okay, so it's all about fasting. This morning I looked it up, Glenn, and I see that the ancient Greeks started the fasting thing. They would not eat but have water, obviously, and that's where it seemed to have become a thing, from what I can make out.
Yeah, well, I suspect it probably even goes back further than that, because I think the cavemen would have been the norm. You know, and you think about the amount of effort that was involved in catching and preparing a meal for the caveman. I really don't believe they were doing that six times a day. Hmm. You know, and the likelihood is that they may have only been eating every second day. You know, certainly the times I've been pig hunting, I've concluded that pigs are fictitious animals, something like unicorns, because I've never actually ever seen one. You know, so you don't always get a kill when you go hunting. You know, and I suspect fasting is part of our genetics since the beginning of life on Earth.
So, okay, this is an interesting one. Try and map it out if it's possible. How often would have a caveman and his clan or whatever, family, eaten in a week, I wonder?
Yeah, well, if you think of the process, so from my understanding, because humans are the only animal that can sweat from every part of their body, the technique they used to use is they would, in the midday sun, picture the African savanna, they would run a herd of gazelles, say, down, they would chase them, and it would take about a half marathon distance, so about 21 kilometres, for the weakest of those animals to lie down with heat stroke. They would then kill the animal. They would then carry it back, you know, walking back now a half marathon, so 22 kilometres. So they've just done a marathon, half of it running, half of it walking. They've taken it back to the cave. Their colleagues that are back at the caves have congratulated them. They've
told
the hunting stories, yeah. Then they've had to light the fire, butcher the animal, prepare the animal, cook the animal. No way in the world that happen six times a day. You know,
that'd be twice a week, maybe three times a week if it wasn't so far to range. But all the calories, energy expended. Burnt up doing it. Yeah, expended, yeah.
Yeah. And you look at a lion, I think lions eat sort of like that, don't they? They sort of have a big meal and then they go hunting again when they're hungry, and it's once every 3 days or something like that.
And here we are now, up to six times a day.
And, you know, and that's been recommended. You know, we've been taught that we should be having breakfast, morning smoko, lunch, afternoon smoko, dinner, and then a ginger nut and Milo before you go to bed. You know, that's what's being advised. I think there's a complete genetic mismatch between that piece of advice and what we're genetically set up to do, which I think is to fast.
Now, we've got the A to Z of fasting. We're not going to get through the entire alphabet in this health hacks. It's two parts. But I think it's worth going through the A to Z. Sounds great. So, first of all, where do we get this A to Z from? And maybe if we go to M, which is about halfway into the alphabet, we can cover the A to M of fasting in this episode.
Yeah, so this comes from Professor Grant Schofield and Dr. Karen Zinn in their second book. So they wrote What the Fat, and that was followed up by What the Fast. So this is a summary of their work. It's an excellent book if you can still come across that, but Fasting, the Science of Spring Cleaning. And here's A. So two really important words, autophagy and apoptosis. So those are really key words in science and in medicine, but think of it like this. Say you own a fleet of cars. Every 3 years, you're going to replace the whole fleet, and that's the apoptosis. But there's also autophagy, which is where you're replacing worn out components. So within that 3 years, you'd have to replace some tires on the car. And that's what we do in the body. So we replace 40 million to 70 million cells every day. Now that's a massive number. For perspective, you have 37 trillion cells, but you're replacing up to 70 million cells every day. So that process of apoptosis, replacing those cells, has to be triggered, and you build new cells in the fed state and you remove old or damaged cells, apoptosis, in the fasted state. Now, if you don't have enough time during the day or the week where you're not fed, then apoptosis is slowed down or potentially even turned off. So you're not removing cancerous cells, you're not removing inefficient cells, you're not removing the cells that aren't as good at producing energy, you're not removing the brain cells that help you to think with absolute clarity. So am I painting the picture of how important this process of removing old and damaged cells to make room for the new ones? It might be a little bit like you and I that are getting a little bit older, Paul. At some stage in our respective careers, we'll have to make space for the the new young efficient ones to come in, and that's what this process of apoptosis is. But that's an energy demanding process to replace the whole cell. So sometimes you're just going to replace the damaged components. So there's a whole lot of repair mechanisms going on. That's the autophagy. And that also happens predominantly in the fasted state. So provide enough time for the body to do that process. And that's the key here. Enough time for apoptosis and autophagy.
All right.
Okay.
Should we go now to B?
We're going to B. B is for brain. We're talking about the advantages for the brain in fasting. So the humans have the biggest brain relative to our total body size. And our brain uses 25% of our daily energy. So it was so important that early humans had the ability to store energy so that the brain could always work. Now, we've been kind of misled to this idea that if you don't eat, you won't be efficient, and if you don't eat, you won't have clarity of thought. But just think back to our caveman friends. If they didn't get a kill on Monday and they didn't get a kill on Tuesday, it doesn't make sense that on Wednesday they were lethargic and couldn't think or plan.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, they had to be stronger, faster, and sharper than they were on Monday. And then if they didn't get a kill on Wednesday, on Thursday, they had to be even better. So fasting actually makes us better, not lethargic and slow.
Yeah.
Because that would make no sense. If our caveman friends hadn't got a kill, they would have died. Because if you weren't good enough to get a kill on Monday and you were less good on Tuesday, you're not going to get a kill on Tuesday. They got better.
They doubled down. They doubled down.
Fasting makes you sharper, clearer in your thinking, and it creates more energy. You know, so it makes sense, and it's actually the truth. You know, people fast if they've got an exam coming up. People fast if they're about to give a lecture. People fast if they have to be really clear in their thinking. So fasting actually improves your brain function, not diminishes it.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then there's little bits of science, these animal studies that show a slowing of progression of certain brain conditions when the animals are fasting. And there's this brain-derived neutrophilic factor, which is essential for creating new connections and new neurons within the brain. So it helps with the brain.
Well, that's always good. C.
C is for calorie restriction. So we have been taught that we should have a low-fat diet and that we should restrict the amount that we eat. So, you know, we shouldn't be over-consuming calories. We should eat less and move more. That's the messaging that we've had for the last 70 years. And with that messaging, we've been getting fatter and more diabetic. So there's clearly something wrong. And this kind of explains what is wrong with that. When you restrict calories, so this is different from fasting. So fasting is missing a meal. Restricting calories over a long period of time, it slows your metabolic rate. And that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Because you're not going to waste calories on creating heat or, thinking, for example, if you're starving. You want to just sort of settle down and conserve energy. And that's up to 80 calories per day. So if you think we're consuming 2,000 calories a day, for example, now 80 calories a day, that's what, 5%, if I've done the maths correctly in my head, of the daily calories. So restricting the amount that you eat slows your metabolic rate, whereas fasting increases your metabolic rate. Going back to what we were just talking about, the caveman needing to be stronger, faster, and better adapted. So missing the meal altogether makes you better and it doesn't slow your metabolic rate. So it makes far more sense to fast than it does to calorie restrict.
Especially if you want to lose weight.
If you want to lose weight, because you don't want to be slowing your metabolic rate. You want to be burning calories while you're sleeping. So, yep, absolutely.
It's the A to Z, but we're not going to get to Z on this health hacks of fasting. Okay, yeah. Glenn.
So we're on to D. Now, advanced glycation end products. So you would have heard me talk on the show a lot about HbA1c, which is the measure of diabetes. It's the amount of glucose that sticks to the red blood cell. It's an example of an advanced glycation end product. Now, there's heaps of these happening all the time. They're sort of proteins that get damaged as we age, and they get removed when we fast. You know, so we want to be fasting so that we can detox these advanced glycation end products. And this makes sense from a scientific point of view as well, because the body is going to be looking for protein to build those new cells that it's making during the fasting state. So where it gets it from is from these damaged proteins. So it's a recycling mechanism of using those precious proteins and putting them into new, better, younger, more efficient cells. So that's part of the detox mechanism and part of the recycling that happens when you fast.
So it scavenges for usable bits. I'm reducing this to the guy in the street, which is me. And then where parts are required, let's say, it has a record, it knows its inventory and can apply that bit which has been scavenged or recycled from some other protein chain or whatever, take that bit out and like plug it in.
Yeah, exactly. And the big point is that recycling of precious proteins happens in the fasted state or more in the fasted state and not in the fed state. So it's part of that autophagy and apoptosis concept, but we've now introduced this idea of the recycling as well. So you know, the body's pretty damn clever once you
That's
get
so cool.
This,
it
yeah,
really
this level. Yeah.
Yeah. And just imagine the control room. All right, E.
E. So E is for energy balance. Now, I love this. The longest recorded fast in human history, and wait for it, is over a year. So somebody fasted, having water and vitamins only, for 382 days.
Man.
So over a year. During that time, he lost 125 kilograms over that 1 year fast. So I think that's one reassuring that you're not going to come to any harm for missing breakfast. If somebody can fast for a year, you're really not going to come to any harm missing breakfast, and you might even miss lunch on that day as well. Yeah. You're not coming to any harm. So I think that's reassuring. But really interesting that 125 kilograms over a year is losing a kilogram every 3 days, isn't it? So that's about how much you could expect to lose if you didn't eat at all. And when you think about that, someone eating, say, 3,000 calories, 1 kilogram of stored fat is 9,000 calories. Okay, so 1 kilogram of stored fat is 9,000 calories, and that's equivalent to not eating for 3 days. So losing weight, losing fat, or losing fat mass is burning those stored calories, and you would do that at a rate of about a kilogram every 3 days if you stopped eating altogether. So that's probably about the maximum weight loss that you'd expect to see. So I often get people come to me and they say, for example, I started keto and I'm really frustrated. I've only lost 4 kilograms in a fortnight, and I'm kind of going, oh my goodness, that's, you know, that's heaps. If you
picture
what a kg of fat looks like, you know, half an ice cream container of fat, and you've lost that from your tummy in 2 weeks, you know, should be really proud of that. And the fastest you could ever expect to lose it is at a kilogram every 3 days.
Yeah. Boy, the human body's tough, isn't it?
Yeah. Hey, so I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the guy who did this fast. So it was back in the 1970s, and he turned up to a hospital in Scotland, and he talked to Dr. Fleming in the emergency department, and he said, he went, Dr. Fleming, I'm a fat bastard, and I want you to keep me here in hospital until I'm skinny. And surprisingly, Dr. Fleming said, yeah, okay. So they admitted him to the ward for a year, and he spent a year lying in a hospital bed, just having vitamins and water, and he was being monitored to make sure that he was okay. So what's amazing about that is the length of the fast, but also that he was able to stay in hospital for a year. You know, you can't even stay in hospital for 4 hours after having a baby at the moment. Yeah. So, you know.
Those are the days.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that would have been a fascinating kind of experiment to operate right in front of you as well.
Yeah, yeah. So that's exactly what happened. So, you know, really reassuring, and I love that story. And yeah, good on that doctor for doing that experiment, and that patient, of course.
Yeah, and he wasn't eating the hospital food because he wasn't eating. So
no, so he wasn't costing him anything. So
no, just the water and the vitamins.
All right, so that's E for energy balance.
Okay. Oh, fat burning. All right.
Fat burning. So follows on from what we were just talking about. The whole idea of being able to store fat is so that you can use it later when there's not enough food. Apparently, the cavemen didn't have refrigerators, so they weren't able to store food for very long. It would, and there was no preservatives in the food back then. So you either ate it or it perished. You know, so you basically ate it and you stored that extra calories in times of plenty as fat. And then in times of scarcity, you burnt that fat. And that was the balance. The balance probably occurred over a year. There probably would have been times when they were able to gain fat and times when they lost it. Very, very similar to a bear who's hibernating. They will try and gain weight and then they go to sleep for 6 months. I know that they slow their metabolism during that time, but they're still burning calories. You have to still breathe and produce heat. And at the end of the 6 months, they come out pretty skinny and pretty hungry. You know, that's what the caveman, I think, would have done. They would have stored fat at the end of the summer, and then they would have gone into times where food was scarce, and they would have lost that weight, and that process would have happened year by year. This ability to store fat is probably one of the key features that has allowed humans to dominate the earth.
That's interesting.
Now we've got a problem. We don't go into times of scarcity. Pack and Save is open 7 days a week. You know, we don't have these times of scarcity. And what we're encouraged to do with this discussion on fasting is to recreate what we're genetically set up to do, which is have times of food scarcity and times where we don't eat. But in order to be able to do that, we have to be able to burn stored fat. And the problem with the modern way of eating and hyperinsulinemia and insulin resistance is that insulin turns off the ability to burn stored fat, which makes sense because when you're in times of plenty is when you're storing fat, and insulin is the fat storage hormone. So it's telling us to store fat. Insulin has to drop to flip the switch to be able to burn the fat. You're not going to be able to burn fat when insulin is high. And that's why so many people can't lose weight. You know, the caveman was fat adapted. Their insulin worked, stored fat in times of plenty, burnt fat in times of scarcity. Mm. Modern humans in the Western world have lost that ability to store fat. They can't lose weight. And you can recreate that by fasting. You can recreate this metabolic flexibility and the ability to burn stored fat by fasting. So one, it recreates the situation where you need to burn the fat, and it drops the insulin to tell your body that it's time to use it and not conserve it.
All right, let's move to the next letter, shall we?
Ooh, genes.
Genes.
G is for genes. So this is this mismatch that I was just talking about. Our modern food environment has created a genetic mismatch between what our genes want to do, which is store fat and burn fat, and what our modern food environment is doing, telling us only to store it. So it takes about 20,000 years for the genes of a population to change in response to a major environmental change. So we've only had agriculture for 12,000 years. You know, we were mainly hunters and gatherers up to that time. There hasn't even been enough time for us to adapt to agriculture, yet we've moved through agriculture into this ultra-processed food environment where our genes are still trying to cope with the fact that, you know, you can grow grain and raise animals in paddocks. So, you know, a massive genetic mismatch, and we have to be aware of that mismatch in order for us to protect our own health. And fasting is the tool to allow us to get back to more of the way that we're genetically set up.
Okay, H means you're going to ask me about jumping in the water.
Yeah, because H is for hormesis.
Yes,
and wonderful segue.
I'm a bit anticipating this.
Yeah, and the answer?
Close. I'm now actively thinking about it. You know, like be when I'm in the water.
Now, that's actually really important because in coaching, we talk about moving from pre-contemplative to contemplative. So you're in the pre-contemplative. You have been in the pre-contemplative phase.
Yeah,
You've now moved into the contemplative phase.
Yep,
and you know the phase after that is action. So
no, I think
you're almost there. But don't leave it too long because the ice will melt.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Anyway. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, not.
this is not about you, Paul. This is not about you. This is about.
I know there have been so many. People's health is hanging off this one act.
Yeah.
So
I
feel the pressure. Don't worry, I'll get there. I've got to fit. You know, I'm not as young as I used to be, so that could be it's like a handicap.
Just remember, though, there's no real kudos in going swimming in Lake Hayes in January. You know, people do that. It's kind of normal. Yeah.
Okay. Well, definitely before January. Thanks for giving me a line in the sand, Glenn. I got more wiggle room than I thought. Anyway, okay, so do we need to describe this again? This is, okay, well, what's hormesis?
Well, hormesis, so you know how we've talked about cold water immersion, saunas, weight training, all examples of hormesis. Fasting is another example of hormesis. It's something which is hard and it creates a short-term stress on the body, which builds resilience and makes us less fragile. You know, that was Grant Schofield's term, wasn't it, to be less fragile.
Yes.
We come back better adapted. So fasting and going through the discomfort of being hungry when you haven't had that meal is a form of hormesis. It's a short, sharp stress that makes us better.
All right. We want to get to M in the time we've got, so should we quietly bury that one? and on to I, all right.
Okay, I's for immune system. Now, I recognize this really interesting thing. When our early human ancestors came out of the trees, they were eating fruit and leaves. They came down and started walking around on two legs on the savanna. To begin with, they would have eaten roadkill. So they would have eaten some dead animal that was partially decayed. Now, insulin is released to in response to seeing and thinking about food to prepare us for that. And it creates inflammation. Insulin creates inflammation, and that is to deal with the bacteria that we would have eaten in that roadkill. Okay, so being hyperinsulinemic and insulin resistant causes inflammation, and inflammation causes all the chronic health conditions. So you can kind of see where that came from. Now, the ketones, which are produced when you fast, beta-hydroxybutyrate, it is anti-inflammatory, and it undoes the inflammation that was done by the insulin. So you can kind of see how this eating and then fasting is the way that we're set up. You create inflammation, and short-term inflammation is beneficial, and then you turn the inflammation off with the ketones. So going between insulin and then ketones, insulin and ketones with eating and then fasting is really going to help inflammation, and it's going to prevent those autoimmune conditions and the arthritis and all that kind of stuff that comes along with chronic inflammation.
We've heard of the inflammation war. This is the inflammation war.
Inflammation, absolutely.
Okay, J is for what?
J is for junk, and we've talked about this, that we produce 40 to 70 billion cells per day. You're going to replace those damaged cells, that junk cells, when you are fasted, not when you're eating.
Got it.
K is for ketones, and I just covered that. The ketones are anti-inflammatory. They're anti-inflammatory within the brain. They're anti-inflammatory throughout the body. So fast, or use a ketogenic diet, which is called a fast mimicking diet. So what we're trying to do with a keto diet, which lowers carbohydrates and increases dietary fats, is we're trying to mimic fasting, because it's easier to eat a keto diet than it is to fast. And there's a limit to how long you can fast, which is 382 days. So
as it turns out,
ketones are really powerful anti-inflammatories, and perhaps the ideal fuel for the brain.
All right. On to L.
L, before we get to M. So we've been demonizing fat for the last 70 years, but we really need to be viewing fat as the ultimate fuel for the body. And so we're talking about a low carbohydrate, higher fat diet, or a low carbohydrate, healthy fat diet as the optimal diet to support fasting. So this combination of lowering carbs, increasing traditional fats, and combining that with intermittent fasting or longer fasts is probably the ultimate prescription for health. You know, so that's really what we're talking about here. And intermittent fasting, just missing breakfast and having your first meal at, say, brunch, can have huge benefits without having to do the prolonged fasts. The prolonged fasts, of course, have of additional benefits, but for most people, missing breakfast, and it makes no sense to eat breakfast if you're not hungry. This idea that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, rubbish. If you're not hungry, don't eat. You know, it's quite simple, and most people aren't that hungry at breakfast time.
That's true. All right, and let's wind up on M, and we'll get to the other half of the alphabet next week. M is for?
Yeah, so M is for metabolism. So when you, when we looked at two groups of people, this study was from Ebling in 2012, looked at two groups of people that had lost weight. So they'd already lost the weight, and then they put them onto two diets to see who gained the weight the most. So they put one group onto a low-carb diet, and they put another group onto a low-fat or a high-carb diet, and they watched to see what happened. The people on the low-carb group, after weight loss, were burning 300 calories per day more than the people on the high-fat, on the high-carb diet. So there's a difference in metabolism of 300 calories per day. Extrapolate that out to a year, that's a 12-kilogram weight gain after losing weight if you go on
after
to
losing weight.
If you go on to that low-fat, high-carb diet. So after you've lost weight, the way to maintain the weight loss is to be on a low-carb, high-fat diet. And then if you add to that what we talked about earlier, that 80 calories that gain or reduction in metabolic rate that we saw from calorie restriction, if people are doing what they used to do, which is eat high carb and restrict calories, that's 380 calories per day that they will be gaining. You know, so no wonder it's been so hard for people to lose weight in the last 7 years.
Doing it all wrong.
Exactly the wrong advice. They've been told to eat more carbs, lower fat, and to restrict the calories. We're saying eat low carb, high fat, and eat until you feel satisfied. Don't restrict the calories, and then add in fasting because you're less likely to feel hungry because fats and proteins are more satiating. So I really understand why we've been getting it wrong. And then we've been adding inflammation and hyperinsulinemia to that. And I certainly and absolutely see, after reading this book by Grant Schofield and Karen Zinn, why we've been unable to lose weight in the last 70 years.
Fascinating. And we've still got another 13 or 12 or 13, I think, letters to go before we get to the Z, or is it the Z? I hear a lot of people saying Z now.
Absolutely the Z.
No, it's Z, but I hear a lot of people saying Z now.
Yeah.
Because they've been brainwashed into it.
Yeah. No, so we'll say Z.
The A to Z. We'll finish up next week, this time, Health Hacks on a Monday here at RCR with Dr. Glenn Davies of reversalnz.co.nz. Always fascinating, as usual, Glenn, and we'll see you in a week.
Thank you, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.